Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Beers with Chad. I'm your host, Chad Wesley Smith, and this is a podcast about stuff I like. Excuse the black eye, but I figured that would be fitting that today's beer is from Beechwood Brewing here in Huntington Beach, and Hop Jitsu, because I hadn't trained jiu-jitsu for like 7 weeks probably, and last night I went, and of course, got a black eye, because I get the most black eyes. For anyone, you know, jiu-jitsu, there's no striking, but somehow I manage to get, I'd say, a black eye every 2 months or so. So I figure since I hadn't been for nearly 2 months, it was pretty fitting that I got one the very first day back, which has got to be a me thing at this point, how much I get them relative to how much anybody else gets them. Because I do a lot of pressure passing, a lot of head down, and probably any time you have a 315-pound man trying to smash past your guard, an elbow or, you know, might get in there and catch the eye. But, you know, these are my best feature. Some might say my only good feature, so I need to be more protective of my baby blues. Over the weekend, we were down in San Diego and went to the Chris Stapleton concert at Petco Park, which was awesome. Chris Stapleton, one of my favorite singers, artists, performers, musicians, and you know, really showed that off. So to be one guy in a huge stadium, whatever it is, probably 40,000 or so capacity, and yeah, not using some of the bleachers because they would have been behind the stage, but then having everything down there in the infield. So probably about 40,000 people at the concert. To be able to be up there, some of it just by himself, you know, a man and his voice and his guitar in front of 40,000 people, and to captivate the audience that way, really amazing performer, just so many great songs. And for a guy to have that powerful of a voice, and then as soon as he, you know, finishes singing and then just rips off this incredible guitar riff, amazing performer. Highly suggest it. We're even thinking about going to see him again in June when he comes to the Hollywood Bowl. And one of his openers was Turnpike Troubadours, the band that I've really liked for the last 10-12 years, though I gotta say they did do Turnpike Troubadour is a little bit dirty in like the way that the sound setup was. It was after the two openers, L. King and Turnpike Troubadours, they, you know, brought in like double the amount of speakers. So the Turnpike Troubadours were fairly quiet, especially for that big of a venue compared to Chris Stapleton. But Stapleton was incredible. Turnpike Troubadours in a smaller venue, fantastic. But, you know, they didn't quite give them the chance, I think, to showcase how great they are too. But if you have the chance to go to Chris Stapleton, it was awesome. Marissa, myself, our friends Colby and Krista, and my brother and his wife down there in San Diego stayed at the Pendry, you know, there in Gaslamp. Such a fun area, walkable, you know, 10-minute walk from the hotel to the concert, and, you know, just an overall great time. And it seemed like about half of Orange County had driven down there to San Diego to see Chris Stapleton. So as I mentioned, today's beer, Beechwood Brewing Hop Jitsu, in honor of my black eye, since I'm back to jiu-jitsu after a little bit of a unplanned hiatus that was a combination of some that my knee had been bugging me for a while, some that I was like, I cannot tweak my back or my knee or anything before the Pebble Beach trip that I had a couple weeks ago. Some, our professor was gone and in Brazil, so, you know, I didn't have quite the accountability that I would normally have, but mostly just being lazy. So cheers to you fine folks. That's good. Today's episode of Beers with Chad, as all episodes of Beers with Chad are, it's brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app. If you want the smartest program for you, getting totally customized, individualized strength training, looking at your gender, age, height, weight, strength, experience, where you miss your lifts, and so much more, Juggernaut AI app looks at all that to create a totally individualized program for you that grows and adapts with your feedback every single day. About 10,000 people around the world using the Juggernaut AI app, trusting it with their training, from beginners to top 10, top 20 in the world all-time lifters. Just this past weekend at the Arnold Sports Festival, Shun Jubril broke his own USAPL American record in the deadlift, pulled 365 kilos, 804 pounds in the 82 and a half kilo, 181 pound class. He's been training with the Juggernaut AI app for over 3 years. So if we got guys pulling 800 at 181, and you're thinking to yourself, I don't know if this app can help me get stronger, save it, because it definitely can. It's helping some of the strongest lifters in the world. But on the other hand of that, if you're thinking it's only for elite lifters, no, it adapts the program whether you're beginner, intermediate, advanced, world elite, whether you're small, like 48 kilo class, national champion, Kate Cohen, whether you're big, young, old. I'm always amazed. I do with people who are yearly subscribers, I do a call, a 30 minute consult call with anyone who signs up for a year subscription. And I'm always surprised that most of the people I'm doing those year subscription calls with are 50 plus, if not 60 or even 70 year old or older. So it can help anyone, and I know it can help you. So use code BEERS to save on your subscription at juggernautai.app. That's the only place that you can do the codes and save. Plus, it's a lot better for us because then Apple and Google doesn't take a big chunk of every subscription. But if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, please make sure to subscribe, rate and review, or wherever you're listening to Beers with Chad. Hopefully you enjoy this episode. Subscribe to the show. Leave me a review, because I'm great at talking, apparently. And cheers.
Welcome to Beers with Chad.
All right, so we've got the Arnold Palmer Invitational coming up this weekend, an elevated event for the PGA Tour, so the $20 million prize purse. And it's, you know, had one of these a couple weeks ago, almost, 3 weeks ago at the Genesis. And these couple weeks in between, we haven't seen as many of the big names. But this week, we will see all of the known, all the big name PGA guys. Scotty, Rory, Victor Hovland, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, all of those guys will be there. But that kind of brings this idea to mind that I've seen a lot of comments on, you know, Zyra Golf or the PGA Tour Instagram or whatever about, oh, no name field. Who are all these no names? You know, Liv has got all the big name guys. Liv definitely does have some many big name guys now. But I feel like when people say that about last week's winner, you know, Austin Eckroat, or the Mexico Open winner the week before that, Mr. Jake Knapp of Mesa Verde Country Club, they're acting like every golfer who is a big name now was Tiger Woods, that we've known him since, you know, that we've known them since they were 5 years old. And it's like, no. Basically every golfer who is now a big name was at one point an unknown. So in a field of lesser known golfers, why are we looking at everyone like they're not talented, or they're not great golfers, or they don't have the potential to become big names? And it seems to me, you know, watching Jake Knapp, and of course I have a personal bias towards Jake because we're from the same country club and I've known Jake since he was in high school, but the PGA is seeming to want to build Jake up because he hits the shit out of the ball. He's got a sweet mullet and mustache combo. By golfer standards, he's pretty jacked. Got an interesting story. He wasn't just a country club kid growing up, but he was a bouncer at a bar, ironically called country club. But, all those different things that they want to build him up into a into a star. But, you know, when it was the 2021 Masters and Will Zalatoris got second place, were people talking about, hey, this guy who looks like Happy Gilmore's caddy, he's a no-name. Why do we care about this? The field's watered down. No, it was a great story. So those guys like Will Zalatoris, who's now a big name, they have to start somewhere. And we're acting like these guys, Austin Eckroat, Jake Knapp, you know, Matthew Pavon, are like not amazing golfers, that if you went and played with them, your mind wouldn't be blown at basically every shot they hit because they're incredible. No, Austin Eckroat was a four-time All-American at Oklahoma State, one of the biggest golf powerhouses. Jake Knapp qualified for the U.S. Open 9 years ago when he was 20 years old. He shot a 61 at a U.S. Open qualifier when he was in high school. You know, he played golf at UCLA, one of the greatest sports schools ever when you look at all sports. He had the 54-hole scoring record at the Mexico Open that he went on to win. And yeah, did he have the best final round? Definitely not. But he won the tournament. You know, he had the 54-hole scoring record at a tournament that guys like Jon Rahm have played before, and Tony Finau, and these quote-unquote big-name guys. They didn't have a 54-hole scoring record. Jake Knapp has it. You know, so to think that because you haven't heard of him or heard of some of these guys in the top five or top 10 before last week, you know, unless you follow college golf, which I don't, it's very unlikely that you're going to know every single up-and-coming golfer, and not every guy who's going to become great. Brooks Koepka, for example, was, you know, college player of the year. Does that happen sometimes with Scottie Scheffler and Jordan Spieth? Yes, of course. Are there stories of guys like, you know, even another local guy here, Bo Hostler, who was up top three at the U.S. Open, you know, at one point during the second and third round when he was in high school? Yeah, and you may have known of those guys a bit longer, but that's not to say that Austin Eckroat or Jake Knapp is not an incredibly talented, accomplished golfer in their own right, just waiting to become a big name. And after Jake, you know, he went on to win the Mexico Open, again, with a bit of a shaky fourth round after saying that 54-hole scoring record. And I think that made a lot of people want to say, oh, his swing can't hold up. He's not really that good. It was a fluke. But then he goes out and goes top five the next week at the Cognizant Classic. And we'll see how he does this weekend at Arnold Palmer. I'm definitely putting in a Jake Knapp top 10 bet for sure this weekend, because how could I not? I mean, local, you know, that's my guy, and he's playing great right now. So when you're watching golf, appreciate the great shots that these guys are hitting. Know that every single person out of that tournament would, one, kick your ass at golf, and if you play with them, be the most amazing golfer that you've ever played with. It's the same thing as, like, you know, people watch a football game and they're like, oh, this quarterback sucks. And they're watching an NFL game. And it's like, that quarterback who sucks, if he went to your high school, he would have been the greatest player that ever played at your high school, just because he's a quarterback that made it to the NFL. You know, even the worst guy out there in an NFL game, or the worst player out there in a PGA tournament, is the best golfer that you would have ever seen. And even though you might not know these guys' names yet, you didn't know Brooks Koepka's name before he was Brooks Koepka. You didn't know Will Zalatoris before he was Will Zalatoris. Unless you follow college golf, you didn't know Colin Morikawa. You didn't know Max Homa. You didn't know all these guys, because, you know, not every single person is winning, you know, USAM and being College Player of the Year. So appreciate these great stories. Appreciate that they're great golfers as they rise up the ranks, and they're going to be the next big name. And what happens with LIV and a PGA Tour merger and the PIF and Strategic Sports Group and all that stuff, who knows? I'm sure something's going to happen. Maybe it's going to be right after the Masters, a merger or something. But the majors, we're going to get to see all the big names together. If the LIV guys come and kick everyone's ass, then maybe I'm changing my tune and it is that the PGA Tour fields are watered down. But I know that those guys are great golfers. They're capable of playing great any weekend and going out and winning tournaments. Anyone who's on the tour is capable of that. They're, you know, every single one of those guys has gone super low at their home course at whatever place. They just needed to line up for that day. You know, harder to do it 4 days in a row when the pressure's on. But I'm excited to see some of these quote-unquote no-names like Austin Eckroat continue to succeed. Like, of course, my guy Jake Knapp continue to succeed. So we're going to take a quick break, and I come back and talk about some 49ers offseason considerations and some other free agent stuff that's going on in the NFL. Today's episode of Beers with Chad is brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app. If you want the smartest program for you, fully customized, adapts to your feedback, grows as you grow as a lifter, visit juggernautai.app and use code BEERS to save on your monthly subscription. All right, so I want to talk about some moves that I want to see the San Francisco 49ers make this offseason. First, I was thinking, like, where are the top 10 free agents in the NFL going to go? And then I realized I don't know that much about all the other free agents in every single team situation, because I love the San Francisco 49ers. And yeah, while I watch a lot of games, you know, I definitely have more inside knowledge and you know, nuanced understanding of the 49ers and what they're going to do. So I'm going to talk specifically 49ers and then a couple of the other interesting free agent storylines as well. So first up for the 49ers as an offseason move, not a free agent move, is signing Brandon Ayuk to an extension. So they've had done the fifth-year option for Brandon Ayuk, and that's a very important thing that I think some people are missing out on. Brandon Ayuk is not a free agent. Brandon Ayuk is under contract for the San Francisco 49ers next year for about $14 million under his fifth-year option because he was a first-round draft pick to them. He doesn't have very much leverage. So even though his buddy came out and said, you know, this is why BA is leaving San Francisco, BA to Vegas, one, that would be very dumb because who's going to throw him the ball? Aiden O'Connell, you know, in, compared to being a second team all pro with the 49ers and having another great chance next year to win a Super Bowl. But similarly to how two off seasons ago, Deebo Samuel, you know, talked about how he was going to be gone. No, that's just a negotiating ploy. The 49ers have done a great job of re-signing their A-list players that Lynch and Shanahan have brought in. So you might be thinking, well, they didn't re-sign DeForest Buckner. He was a Trent Baalke guy, not that they didn't love DeForest Buckner. But they've done a great job at extending and keeping in-house their great players who they want to keep. And they're going to do the same thing with Brandon Ayuk. 49ers, and you might be also thinking, well, the 49ers are already paying all these guys. How do they have money to sign Brandon Ayuk? Well, guess what? They do. The 49ers front office is very smart. They're very clever. They're very strategic about how they've set these contracts up, whether it's restructures and converting stuff to bonuses so they have more cap room for that given year. And, you know, some of that, yeah, is kicking the can down the road with some guys. And that'll, you know, take some more creativity when that time comes. But they rolled over about $35 million of cap space from last year to this year. Plus, the cap was much higher than expected, you know, at almost $255 million rather than about the $240 million that people were thinking in projections before. So they're in a very good place. They've got plenty of money to re-sign Brandon Ayuk. Are they going to re-sign him for more than they think he's worth? No, because smart front offices don't do that. And the 49ers have assembled the best roster in the NFL by being a very smart front office. So I have full confidence that they're going to re-sign Brandon Ayuk, that he's going to be back. He's going to be very important to the 49ers' success. You know, and as I think about it, it's going to be next offseason after the 2024 season, after hopefully becoming Super Bowl champions in February 2025, that some tough decisions will have to be made because at that point, Brock Purdy, maybe next year's NFL MVP, maybe next year's Super Bowl MVP, you know, will be eligible for an extension. Then some tougher decisions are going to be made. And I would expect at least one of these kind of 49ers stalwarts, George Kittle, Kyle Juszczyk, Deebo Samuel, Eric Armstead, to probably not be on the team the year after that, whether it's a trade or that they have to release him because of that. But this next year, they're going to re-sign BA, or they're going to extend BA, rather, and it's going to be basically the same crew coming back for next year. Part of that same crew is going to be doing the restricted free agent tender to Third and Juwan Jennings. Fully expect them to do that as well. Again, another situation where the 49ers are in control. of, you know, largely in control of his contract. They can match anything else because he is a restricted free agent, not an unrestricted free agent. Now, beyond guys who are already on the team, anyone who watched the Super Bowl, anyone who watched the 49ers this year knows that their offensive line, specifically the right side of their offensive line, needs some help. Luckily, there are some really good options out there, whether that's Robert Hunt from the Miami Dolphins running a similar offense to the 49ers under Mike McDaniel. He's available as a free agent. I think he's a great free agent target for them. I think Graham Glasgow from the Lions is a great free agent target for them. And if neither of those were to work out, I could see the possibility of Laken Tomlinson, a former 49er who they let walk 2-3 seasons ago, played the last couple years with the Jets, someone that they could get in a very affordable contract if they can't sign one of those bigger names in Hunt or Glasgow. So shoring up that right side of the offensive line with a free agent signing. Then at defensive end, this year they had 3 defensive ends on 1-year contracts. Chase Young, Cleveland Farrell, and Randy Gregory. Now Chase Young, when he got there, everyone's like, oh my God, Avengers, all the Infinity Stones, this is unfair, the 49ers D-line is too stacked. And then Chase Young, largely disappointed. In the Super Bowl, he played much better. He gave flashes of Rookie of the Year, Chase Young. Chase Young that could form an incredible bookend to Nick Bosa in this dominant defense. If his performance and his potential was enough to get some team out there to give him, you know, a 3-year, $30 million deal, something like that, then of course he's going to go take that because the 49ers aren't going to pay him that. But if Chase Young sees the best opportunity for himself as maybe a 1-year prove-it deal with the 49ers with, you know, more guaranteed money because it's a 1-year deal, but, you know, like a 1-year $10 million, 1-year $8 million deal and a real chance to win a Super Bowl playing opposite his old college teammate Nick Bosa, then I could definitely see them re-signing Chase Young. But my preference would be that they re-sign Cleveland Farrell. Cleveland Farrell is much better against the run, where the 49ers struggled against the run, even though some of that, it seems, was a Steve Wilks scheme issue. Cleveland Farrell is going to play against the run much harder. He's going to play overall with greater effort level. While Chase Young, yeah, he played hard in the Super Bowl, but you saw those plays of him loafing against the Lions on the backside of these plays, and not every week is the Super Bowl, but we need a guy who's going to play hard every week. So my preference would be they re-sign Cleveland Farrell. They're going to be able to get him way cheaper, I think, than Chase Young. But if Chase Young, you know, is going to come in on an affordable deal and do that, and they can sign both of them, that would be awesome. Drake Jackson, coming off a knee surgery, coming off another really disappointing season. And, you know, last offseason, if you asked about Drake Jackson, I was pumped about Drake Jackson. He got bigger. He got way stronger in the offseason. It seemed like he had flipped, you know, the switch from a work ethic standpoint. And then he goes out and gets 3 sacks the first week against the Steelers. And it's like, man, Drake Jackson, this is going to be his breakout season. And then he kind of went back to being Drake Jackson, not a very hard worker, not the guy who seemed like he had changed so much about his work ethic through last offseason. Maybe this offseason, through his rehab and has another great offseason, and maybe next year is the year he flips the switch, but I wouldn't be shocked if Drake Jackson's not on the San Francisco 49ers next year. Then the other one would be rookie, going to be a second-year guy, Robert Beal Jr., super explosive, got to, you know, put on some weight, put on some size to be able to stand up to the run a little bit better. But if he can just be in there as a situational pass rusher opposite Nick Bosa, he's going to, you know, play a role, an important role. And Chris Kocurek is great at developing players. So I'd see them at least re-signing one of those DNs. Cleveland Farrell, I think, is my preference. This would probably be cheaper than Drake Jackson and give you better performance against the run. But we'll see how all that shakes out. Then on another former 49er I could see them bringing back is Azeez El-Shaair. With Dre Greenlaw, you know, having the Achilles injury in the Super Bowl, like, let me preface all this by saying I love Dre Greenlaw. I've loved the time that I've been around Dre Greenlaw up during the offseason in the weight room up there. He's one of my favorite players to watch. He plays with so much passion, you know, so much speed. But really tough injury, and it happened as late in the season as possible. So yeah, there's talk that Dre Greenlaw is going to be ready to go week one, but having a guy in Azeez Elshire back, you know, is with the Titans, was with the 49ers previously, seems like a guy who wants to be back with the 49ers. I mean, he's down on the field with the linebackers pregame against the Packers or the Lions. Like, he's posting highlight videos of his days with the 49ers. So I see, you know, he wants to be back. If it'll take a bit of a team-friendly deal to do that, you're going to have a guy who knows the system well, who knows the culture well, who's great for the team culture. And if Dre Greenlaw is not ready, or just, you know, a step slower, needs more rotate, you know, needs more someone to rotate in with him more next year, Azeez would be the perfect fit for that. Then the draft, I expect them in the first round to address tackle, someone to play right tackle, or at least someone to compete with Colton McKibbitz for the right tackle position at the start of the year, and then probably at some point during the season take over. Because you also have to think, how much longer does Trent Williams have? Trent Williams is incredible, the silverback, the beast, one of the greatest tackles of all time, but dude's been around a long time. You know, looking to the future beyond this upcoming season, let's say the 49ers win the Super Bowl next year, I'm definitely not surprised if Trent Williams retires right after that, going out on top of the Super Bowl. Maybe he plays two more seasons. So to draft a tackle this year who can play right tackle, who can learn from Trent, you know, just how to be a pro, how to work, all that stuff. And then when Trent does retire, this guy could slide over to left tackle. That would be great. But to have a high quality right tackle and to spend that first round pick on them on one this upcoming draft, I think is going to be key for them. Then, you know, signing a corner, whether it's drafting a corner higher in the second round, whether it's trading a couple picks to move up a little bit higher to get a corner. If the scheme is doing what it should be, and with Sorensen now as the DC, and you know some of the coverage ideas that Brandon Staley's going to come in, I think the 49ers corners are good enough. They definitely, you know, Javarius Ward is great. DeMondre Lenore and Ambry Thomas have shown flashes. If they can play consistently physical football like they showed flashes of, then great. Hufanga going to be healthy. Hufanga and Jair Brown going to be a great safety duo. I'd be surprised to see Tayshawn Gibson back, but maybe on a one-year deal if he's cheap. You know, he knows the schemes and he's a great leader. So those are my thoughts on 49ers offseason. Some of the other kind of notable offseason stuff, quarterback carousel. Kirk Cousins free agent as of this afternoon. Russell Wilson free agent. I'd expect Justin Fields to get traded. Much more likely to be traded than released. Baker Mayfield should go back to the Bucs. He did really well there. They just re-signed Mike Evans. Baker Mayfield back to the Bucs. Will Kirk Cousins go back to the Vikings? I think seems like it's a bit bigger of a question mark. We've even heard talk of the Vikings trying to trade for Trey Lance, who's from Minnesota, who went to school in North Dakota, and for Trey Lance to be the quarterback of the Vikings next year. But I'd also expect them to draft a quarterback, whether that's, you know, J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix. If Kirk's not there and they need a rookie to play right away, Michael Penix Jr. probably the guy for that. And then where does Fields get traded to and where does Russell Wilson land? So let's say Cousins ends up on the Falcons, even though there's a lot of Justin Fields talk to be traded to the Falcons. And, you know, I think some of that is a feeling that, like, Justin Fields is Michael Vick-esque and, you know, that's the most prominent Falcons quarterback of all time. But for the Falcons, Kirk Cousins would be a much better fit as just someone who can distribute the ball effectively to the great weapons that they have, and Drake London and Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson, Tyler Algiers. They would have a really formidable offense with Kirk Cousins in there and a really good offensive line. I think that Justin Fields could do well there too, but you know, if the Falcons want to win an extremely open NFC South next year, sign Kirk Cousins. Is he going to be more expensive? Yeah, but you have a lot of your other big offensive stars still on rookie contracts, so they can get away with that. Then I could see Justin Fields going to the Raiders. You know, if there's two, so we have Fields and Wilson left. I don't see Antonio Pierce gelling with Russell Wilson from a, you know, personality standpoint. Now, one caveat to that being you're going to make one of your biggest rivals, the Broncos, pay this guy $40 million while you can pay him on a veteran minimum contract and, you know, just really stick it to them there. So I could see Russell Wilson going to the Raiders for that. But I hear a lot more Russell Wilson to the Steelers talk. And then I think Justin Fields to the Raiders would be an interesting fit. Then there's a great free agent running back class as well. Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley. They said that they're not tagging him today. Josh Jacobs, Austin Eckler. Where do those guys land? What is the value of the running back in the free agent market? Really hard to tell. There was this talk, you know, I think a lot of people thinking Derrick Henry to the, and Tony Pollard being a free agent as well. This talk of Derrick Henry to the Cowboys, man, you know, that would have been this big signing. And then as Jerry came out talking about we're all in, and then what does that actually mean? And now it seems more and more likely that they make, or they have Dak play this last year of his contract, despite that being a nearly $60 million cap hit for them. And that just hamstringing so much more of what they can do. So that's my final thing, this, you know, the big question mark, because if Dak plays on that $60 million cap hit, I can't imagine a world where they sign one of these bigger name free agent running backs. Are they able to re-sign Tyron Smith? Does Tyron Smith go somewhere else? Does he retire? You know, as you look at the predicament that the Cowboys have put themselves in with Dak's contract, they can't trade him because he's got no trade clause. It's written in his contract that they can't franchise tag him. So unless they extend him, he's going to have a $60 million cap hit this year. So he has so much negotiating leverage that the idea of a five-year, $300 million extension for Dak Prescott is very real. And my best friend Paul is a big Cowboys fan, and I know that idea is very scary to him, to the point where he joked, and, you know, just a pipe dream for me, that if they do that he's switching fandom to the 49ers. I'd be surprised if that actually happens for a Dallas native. But they allowed that situation, you know, by not extending him earlier in this last contract and getting it done at a little bit cheaper price. They, you know, gave up a lot of negotiating leverage and now have found themselves in such a worse position. And because of what they had done with Zeke's contract before, and just kind of bad decisions that Jerry makes, and they've got a lot of good players on their team. He's, you know, the Jones family does a very good job in some respects from a football standpoint with that roster. They've drafted really well. They've got great players on there. But when you pay good players like they're great, or in this case, you know, pay, let's call them very good quarterback, like he's the best ever, if Dak gets 5 years, $300 million, that's where you really run into problems. Should they do that? If they feel like this year is a great chance, you know, the best chance for them to win a Super Bowl, then I think that they need to extend him so they can sign some other free agents. If they want to wait and see, then they let him play on that $59.4 million cap hit. Take this year for what it is, because they're not going to be able to keep some guys like Tyron Smith and Tony Pollard. See how they do. And if Dak plays great, then extend him, you know, then he'll be an unrestricted free agent. But I'd assume they would sign him after the year. And then they can, you know, deal with that all down the road and kind of kick the can down the road. But they've really just put them, the Cowboys have really just put themselves in a tough situation there. Yeah, you know, last kind of thought on the Cowboys with that is that the way that Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones operate, they're so insular in, you know, whether it's having former Cowboys on the staff or former Cowboys coaches come back and be coaches, or Jones family members making these decisions. There's a great book called Range by an author named David Epstein. And in it, they talk about, you know, varied, you know, having various points of view for important decision making. And similarly to the Patriots having so many Belichicks, or previously having so much Belichick-centered control and coaches, the Cowboys have so much Jones around there. that they're not able to, you know, if all you got are Cowboys and Joneses, all you've got are Cowboys and Jones solutions. I think they really need to bring in someone from the outside, someone from outside the Cowboy and Jones tree to help them with their football decisions. And then the last, you know, my last closing thought in regards to the Cowboys there and Dak specifically is, and this is easy for me to say sitting here, you know, with my phone filming me in my office, that no one's ever offered me $60 million to do anything. But if I'm Dak Prescott, have some self-awareness to one, know that you're not the best quarterback ever, so why should you be paid as it? But two, and more so, is to know that how much more successful will you be if you took $50 million a year, $45 million a year, so you could sign a better offensive lineman, sign a better running back, add an extra really good wide receiver, and remain as the Dallas Cowboys quarterback for your entire career? Because the value of that, if you ask Tony Romo, who's making, you know, what, $17, $18 million a year working 2 days a week, or Troy Aikman, or, you know, Jason Witten for a time in there, or Jimmy Johnson, the power of being so closely associated with the Cowboys brand, the biggest brand in all of sports, the extra tens or hundreds of millions of dollars that brings you over the rest of your life. Or ask Roger Staubach, you know, one of the biggest real estate magnates in all of Dallas, because he was a great Cowboys quarterback. So taking a little bit less now to remain being the Cowboys quarterback for all of your career, to make that process more successful by being able to sign better people around you and understand the value that that has for the rest of your life, compared to, let's say, you play out this deal and then go somewhere else and you become, you know, the Carolina Panthers quarterback, or the Jaguars quarterback, or the Bucks quarterback, or, you know, even the, well, it wouldn't be the Chargers, but, or the Seahawks quarterback. And it's just not that important, and you're not going to get those same post career opportunities as you would. I think that that's really worth considering. And again, no one's trying to pay me $60 million to do anything. So it's easy for me to say, take 45 instead of 60, you know, when you're the one who's going to set up your family for generational wealth. But guess what? 45 sets them up for generational wealth just as well. So that's always just kind of confusing to me, when it's always, well, this is the next quarterback up, so he's going to become the highest paid guy ever. Because, you know, people are saying that about Justin Fields. They're like, well, if the Bears keep him, they're going to have to pay him. And it's like, yeah, but why would they be paying him $55 million a year? He's not Joe Burrow. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Justin Herbert. Like, and he should know that, his agent, and does know that, you know, when he closes his eyes at night, he knows that he's not that those guys. His agent knows it too. I know it's their job to get as much money as possible, but the team understands it. The player in his heart of hearts understands it. So like, take 35 and get some better players around you and have a better team and a more successful career, and let that be what, you know, extends and parlays out into greater lifetime success. So those are my thoughts. Gonna talk with Naaman Gracie later this week, so be on the lookout for that episode. If you haven't watched the Cub Swanson episode, really, really enjoyed that. So appreciative to Cub for his openness, for his vulnerability in that conversation, as we talked about, you know, his tough upbringing, being in juvenile hall, finding jiu-jitsu, finding MMA, his 20-year MMA career, his plans beyond MMA, now as a coach and a manager, and still an active fighter. So I'd really encourage you to go check that episode out. If you have, you know, people you want me to have on, I can try and get them. So put that down in the comments. Make sure to subscribe to the channel, subscribe to the podcast, rate and review. Really appreciate it. Again, drinking Beechwood Brewing's Hop Jitsu. Apologize for my baby blues not looking as great as they normally do. Use code BEERS to save on your subscription to the Juggernaut AI app at juggernautai.app. And cheers to you fine folks.